The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. In this episode, we will continue to have a little bit more of the July issue of Our State Magazine, which the theme is all about summer fun. The first article is called Gone Camping. A Flat Rock restaurant plays tribute to the summer camp culture that's deeply woven into the landscape of Western North Carolina, inviting diners to revisit carefree childhood memories. And the photographs here, and I'm not a chocolate fan, your reader's not a chocolate fan here, but this looks really good. At Campfire Grill, the s'mores skillet turns a classic treat into a dip for the whole table. And there's a skillet with handles on either side, and it looks like there's chocolate and marshmallows and graham cracker crumbles, and it looks like you pull it out with a spoon and put it onto a graham cracker. And it looks like it would be pretty decadent. I can't get Star Teal, who owns Campfire Grill, to talk about Campfire Grill. This story is supposed to be about Campfire Grill. How about you just go and you ask the questions when you need to, Star says. And I say, sure, but he's already going and going. Though I say this to him without any malice whatsoever, it's a joy to talk to him. He may be an actual international man of mystery. He spent a not entirely disclosed amount of time doing a not entirely disclosed set of things in Saudi Arabia. I left all my stuff here, though, he says, meaning Hendersonville and Flat Rock. This is me asking him why Hendersonville, why Henderson County, why so many folks go to camp here, fall in love here, and eventually move here. Historically, it's a retirement community, says, but not anymore. Not with remote working. We've got great schools here. In the global world, this is a wonderful place to be, to still get wherever you need to go. This is an incredible place. If you're a paddler, biker, climber, hang on, okay? We're on the phone. We've been texting, then talking. Star is tough to get hold of. I'm about to go up the mountain, he says. If I lose you, I'll call you at the top. He loses me. I already know that he was once interested in car racing and that he went to racing school in England and that he was good, but not that kind of good. I know that he once lived across the street from a famous French bakery, was allowed to spend a day observing the bakers. I know that he briefly stood somewhere near the forefront of a bread revolution in America, and I know that he helped install the first wood-fired cooking oven in North Carolina. I mean, except for the Moravians, a live-fire pizza oven for a golf course kitchen in Henderson County. I know that there's now a wood-fired bread oven in the back of the Wrinkled Egg, which is a tenant of Star's, and along with the Hubba Hubba Smokehouse and Campfire Grill, constitutes one of the most unlikely outcroppings of shops you'll ever find in North Carolina or anywhere else. I know that Campfire Grill opened 6 days before the pandemic shut down. I know that I need Star Teal to get to the top of the mountain. He does. He calls. Hey, buddy, you still there? I am. Star gets going once again. There's a canoe hanging from the ceiling of Campfire Grill. There are photographs of campers and counselors all over the walls. Star Teal's dad among them. Carl Sandburg among them. There's a patio so pretty I'm going to call it sweet, and a stone fireplace so welcoming that the second half of this sentence is going to collapse if I try to call it anything else. There are 6 pre-feast wine nights, Italian, French, Oaxacan, and beyond. There's sometimes live music, there are crab cake specials and prime rib specials, and much of the menu is wood-fired. The whole place is a little more upscale, a little more innovative, a little nicer than you might imagine from the road. It just keeps surprising you. It's kind of a cross between homage and shrine, which makes sense. Summer camp occupies an outsized space in Star Teal's heart. It's foundational, right? He asks me. It was for you, too, right? It was. It is. I'm laughing now with Star about his first loves and summer camp loves, and I'm confessing that I was serially in love over several summers and that I wrote letters and still have mixtapes. Star says, it's just so good while it's good. He means those early, intense buddy systems of the soul, I know. But it's clear that he also means camp in general. Foundational, transformative, utopian. These are words that might ring hollow coming from someone else, but coming from Star, what they sound like is honesty. In so many ways, summer camp seems to be Star Teal's life. He wants, needs, insists on talking about camps, about campers, and about Camp Lifey, where he hasn't even been on the board in several years. Camp Lifey, put simply, Camplify, maybe that's Camplify, put simply, is an organization dedicated to making sure that local kids with limited means, these are kids who wouldn't get the chances I got, he says, have the opportunity to go to summer camp and to thrive there. The program identifies youth from Henderson County and the surrounding area starting in fourth grade and provides them with high-quality mentorship opportunities all the way from weekends away to counselor and training programs in high school. Star wants kids in camp, all kids, kids from every background, because camp is the place where kids can totally disconnect. You can hear the smile growing in his voice, can hear the conviction. Camps have even greater value now, he says, and the now he means is the digital childhoods that he and I were lucky enough, because of how old we are, to avoid. Put the phones down, and these kids can learn to be their own person, he says. They learn face-to-face problem solving. They learn community collaboration. There are more than 150 local kids at various levels of the Camplify program at any time. If any one kid gets to have an adventure in their life, it seems, then Star Teal wants to help ensure that any kid could have the same opportunity. We've got stories of some of these children. You take a child who gets involved in ceramics, and suddenly they have a skill. Pottery, climbing, folk arts, sports. These kids see things they'd never really thought about before. Star opened Campfire because he thought the collection of shops and restaurants within the complex he owns, locally known as Little Rainbow Row, was in need of a community grill. Campfire hires a lot of camp kids, Star tells me. And Camplify kids, I ask? Oh, sure, Star says, but again he pivots, wants to talk about the economic impact that the camps have on Henderson County. These camps are heart of the community, he says. And he's going again, name-dropping camp director after camp director, telling me who I should talk to instead of him. I went to Canoga. We could hear the blue star over the hill. Star Teal was a counselor at Falling Creek. My grandfather went to Mondamin. My father later confirms also using the word foundational. I think Star doesn't want to talk much about the restaurant because he doesn't want anything in the way of the idea and the promise of summer camp in the way of the camps themselves. Fair enough. Let's pull up a chair at Campfire Grill, probably outside this time of year, and let's think about all those kids at all those Hendersonville camps around campfires of their own. Maybe they're singing. Maybe there are skits. Maybe there are s'mores, right? There are s'mores here at our table in Flat Rock, a s'mores skillet, something that manages to be a tribute to a s'more and also the thing itself all at once. The restaurant performs just about this very same trick. It's a cool spot. It's about as cozy as a cabin. Don't tell Star I told you. Ask him about Camplify instead. For Campfire Grill information, check out campfiregrillnc.com. Campfire Grill is located on Greenville Highway in Flat Rock. Looking back over some of the pictures, we've got a picture of Star Teal, who runs Campfire Grill with managing partners Amelia and Kip Lindsay, has been a supporter of Henderson County camps since he was a counselor at Falling Creek Camp in the 1970s. And then there's another picture of a burger and a glass of beer. Many of Campfire's entrees, like the counselor burger, get their signature flavor from the restaurant's wood-fired grill. And then there's another photo of several, it's very simple, plain interior, but a group of people seated at a couple of half booths. And then some vintage local camps shared photos from their archives, filling Campfire Grill with summertime snapshots of archery, swimming, and horseback riding. The images trace the history of Henderson County camp culture back to the 1920s. Our next article is entitled Swimming Across North Carolina. One writer sets his sights on an ambitious goal, aiming to swim at every YMC pool in the state. In the water, he finds familiarity, fortitude, and memories of his first and most important coach, his dad. Earliest childhood memory. I'm bobbing and swaying in the gentle white caps of Curie Beach on Pleasure Island, just south of Wilmington, safe in my father's sturdy arms. My tiny hands hold tight to Dino, the inflatable green dinosaur that Mom and Dad bought for my sister and me at the Sinclair gas station back home in Asheboro. Dad holds me up, assures me that he won't let go, and I know beyond a shadow of a doubt that when I'm in the water with my father, nothing will harm me. Adult memory. Four decades later, Dad and I are on a road trip across the Southeast. The year is 2004, and he's accompanying me on the reading tour for a book that I've written on Southern music. In a hotel room in Nashville, I'm feeling nervous about a TV appearance the next morning. "Why don't you go for a swim?" Dad says to me. "It'll make you feel so much better." For as long as I can remember, swimming has been my lifeline. It's where I find peace and serenity after long days of writing and editing. Elemental calm when it feels to me like the world's out of kilter. When I'm swimming, nothing matters but my breathing, my strokes, and the warm caress of the water as my body glides like a vessel from one end of the pool to the other. As of this writing, I've swum in 50 YMCA pools across North Carolina, from Asheville to the Outer Banks. I've swum in rural, tiny rural-wise, in small towns like Eden, Barco, and Albemarle, and at massive modern-wise in Charlotte, Raleigh, and Wilson. I didn't start out with the goal of swimming at every YMCA pool in the state. That's happened gradually, beginning in 2002, shortly after I returned home following many years living in New York City and Los Angeles. I'd reached my early 40s and needed to start exercising more. Running was out of the question. I never enjoyed sweating on the side of a road as cars whizzed by. But swimming was a long-lost love of mine. It was something I knew I could do and would do. From my apartment in Uptown Charlotte, my closest indoor pool was at the Dowd Y on Moorhead Street. For about 4 years, I began each day there, swimming 20 laps before heading over to the Charlotte Observer, where I worked as the entertainment editor. Later, after moving to the Plaza Midwood neighborhood, I stuffed my swim trunks, goggles, and a towel in my backpack and bike over to the Johnson Y in nearby Noda. On those occasions, when I'd visit my parents in Asheboro, I'd accompany my dad on his daily stroll down the wooded path leading from his neighborhood to the sprawling Randolph Asheboro YMCA. There, I'd swim laps while Dad walked his dog, Jetta, around the soccer fields. The beauty of lap swimming is that you can do it anywhere. There's a comforting sameness to a standard 25-yard swimming pool, a feeling that wherever you are, if you're a swimmer, you'll be able to find your fountain of youth, your source of inner strength. In October 2017, when Dad was undergoing cancer treatments at High Point Regional Hospital, I'd head over to the Hartley Drive Family YMCA for a swim to clear my mind. 4 months later, when my mom was dying of pneumonia at Moses Cone Hospital in Greensboro, I'd duck out for swims at the Kathleen Price Bryan Family YMCA downtown. One of the first things I did when my sister and I made the agonizing decision to put Dad into hospice care last year was drive to the Y, the same one that he and I had walked to countless times, and swim 40 laps. When you're in the water, no one can see your tears. The relationship between my dad, swimming, and me goes back to the mid-1960s and the big T-shaped city pool at Memorial Park in Asheboro. I can close my eyes and still see the towering high-diving board and sparkling turquoise water, feel the warmth of the sun, hear the summer hits playing on the staticky AM radio. "Stop in the Name of Love" by the Supremes. "I Can't Help Myself" by the Four Tops. "Ticket to Ride" by the Beatles. I was maybe 5 years old when Dad, barely in his 30s, tossed me into the pool, explaining to my mom that this was the best way for a kid to learn how to swim. Apparently it worked, because I'm still here to tell about it. When our family joined the Asheboro Country Club shortly thereafter, I began my official swim lessons and spent whole summers sharpening my technique in the club's pool and lake while Dad whacked little white balls around the 9-hole golf course. When I won a few first-place ribbons for my diving abilities, Dad beamed with pride. I was never great, Never the great football, baseball, or basketball player that he'd hope I'd be, but I could swim like a fish, and that was good enough for him. Back then, Ashboro didn't have a YMCA facility, and even by the time I reached junior high and high school, there were no aquatics teams that I could join. So I spent my summer swimming solo, jetting across outdoor pools, diving from cliffs at rock quarries, swinging into lakes and rivers from ropes tied to tree branches, and freestyling as far out as the Atlantic as I could during beach vacations. Water was everything to me. When I was in it, I never wanted to be out of it. In one of the greatest books ever written about swimming, Haunts of the Black Masseur, the swimmer as hero, the late Charles Sprawson, wrote of his vague conception of swimmer as someone rather remote and divorced from everyday life, devoted to a mode of exercise where most of the body remains submerged and self-absorbed, the introvert and eccentric, individualists involved in a mental world of their own. In the book, Sprawson obsessively documents every literary reference to swimming that he can find, including quotes and anecdotes from such heavy hitters as Homer, Ovid, Edgar Allan Poe, Lord Byron, Charlotte Bronte, and George Eliot. Byron was particularly fond of swimming. In 1810, the 22-year-old poet swam 4 miles across Hellespont, a dangerous strait in Turkey now known as the Dardanelles. He did it in honor of the Greek mythological character Leander, who drowned at Hellespont while swimming to meet his lover Hero on the other side. Byron aimed to prove that a man could survive the swim, and he succeeded. I plume myself on this achievement more than I could possibly do on any kind of glory, political, poetical, or rhetorical, he wrote to his friend Francis Hodgson. Swimming may be a solitary endeavor, but it's also a competitive activity, whether you're trying to prove a point, as Byron was, training for a triathlon, or just doing laps at a YMCA. No matter where I'm swimming, at the local Y during my lunch break, or at an out-of-town Y while traveling around the state, I find myself always trying to be the best swimmer in the lane next to me. It's involuntary, like breathing. I feel victorious when I overtake my neighbor, and I'm humbled when my neighbor overtakes me. At the YMCA in Goldsboro last summer, I met a woman who looked to be in her mid-60s. I'd been watching her in the next lane as she bolted by me multiple times, gracefully, effortlessly, with perfect form. When we both stopped for a rest, I complimented her on her speed and stamina. "How do you do it?" I asked. She smiled like a yogi. "I work with a coach," she said. "It changed my life." Upon returning home, I reached out to an old friend, Doug Miller. He founded a company in Mecklenburg County called Miller Swimming, where he coaches water lovers of all ages. Back in 2017, when I was having shoulder problems, Doug suggested that I discard paddles that I'd been using to try and build strength. Now I told him I was in a rut. I needed some assistance with my technique. "I'd love to help," he wrote back. "As you know, swimming is all about technique. We'll get you out of that rut." Doug took me on, and in just a few sessions, I was rotating my body more efficiently, using fewer strokes, swimming faster with less effort. Now my mind was freed up to do what I enjoyed most about swimming. Meditate. Ponder life's mysteries. Recall fond memories of summer vacations past. In the future, when I feel bad habits creeping into my lap swimming routine, I plan to call on Doug for refresher sessions. Aside from my dad, I've never known a more supportive coach in any sport that I've ever attempted. Not that I'll be participating in any triathlons anytime soon, or ever really. For me, swimming is an inward pursuit, a prayer, a reckoning with mortality. I never feel more alive than when I'm in the water, my head coming up for air at precise intervals. It's an altered state of consciousness, a zen-like feeling in which body and ego eventually cease to exist. In some religions, water represents cleansing, renewal. In fact, water is what we are, about 60% of our bodies, nearly three-quarters of the Earth's surface. I remember leaving the Dover Foundation Y in Shelby after a swim while traveling through Cleveland County and seeing a sign taped to the wall that read, "The world is 71% water." Your children are 100% curious. Things have changed in my hometown. Not only does Ashboro have that big YMCA facility near my dad's house, the home in which I grew up and where I live again today, but the local high school also has a swim team. And as it turns out, swimming is in our family's blood. Today, my cousin Megan Becker is a star member of the Ashboro High School swim team, one of the best swimmers of her age group in the state. Last year at the North Carolina High School Athletic Association swimming competition, she finished in second place in the 100-yard freestyle event and fourth in the 200-yard freestyle event. When I look in Megan's eyes, I see a young girl with an old soul, a competitive athlete with a contemplative spirit, in pursuit of an activity that allows her to feel safe in what Charles Sprawson would characterize as a mental world of her own. Really, most of the swimming part is just training, Megan told the local paper after a big win. Mentally, you have to have a good spirit and tell yourself you can do it. One day, perhaps Megan, too, will take on the challenge of swimming across North Carolina, maybe even around the world. For now, the chase is mine. The goal of swimming at all 82 indoor YMCA pools in the state propels me to tiny towns around the mountains, across the Piedmont, and along the coast to leafy suburban neighborhoods, sprawling rural fields, and concrete sidewalks of city streets. Outside the hulking YMCA buildings, the landscapes are different, hilly or flat, lush or barren, but inside their cavernous aquatic centers, I find myself in a familiar place among fellow swimmers seeking harbor in an unpredictable world. In December, my dad died peacefully after only one night in hospice. He was ready to go. Throughout my life, he'd honored my curiosity and prepared me for something that he had never learned to do properly. When Dad was a little boy, his mother was so frightened of the water that he had to sneak out to go swimming. He wasn't going to make the same mistake with me. Dad saw my love of the water early on, and he encouraged it. He was a good dad, the best a guy could have. Our next article is from, it's a regular series of Ramblin' Man, and this one is called Backcountry Luxury. For a pair of happy campers, perfectly content to rough it in the wilderness, a glamp ground in Watauga County offers all the creature comforts plus a change of heart. And the pictures here, among the accommodations at Blue Bear Mountain Camp are stargazer domes. Although the structures bear a passing resemblance to tents, even a lifelong outdoorsman would tell you that they're much cozier. And we have what looks like a dome, canvas dome. It's got a solid door leading in on a deck. Jiminy Cricket, the stars. I can't even ever remember seeing so many stars. They glittered and sparkled and twinkled, of course, like a vast sequined blanket spread over the ridgeline of Elk Knob. So many stars. Such a rare treat these days. I stood outside trying to take it all in until I started shivering in the cool mountain air and headed back into my tent. Which really wasn't a tent, because I wasn't really camping, not in any sense I'd ever known. Despite the scent of campfire smoke that still clung to my hair, despite the marshmallows that Julie and I had toasted over the coals for s'mores, and despite the camp stove set up on the picnic table, ready to fire up the morning coffee, we really weren't camping. Instead, Julie and I were glamping, which is something altogether different and something I had long been convinced that I was never going to do. Instead of a tent, we were bunked down in an insulated geodesic dome mounted atop a raised wooden platform. Inside was a queen bed with soft sheets and a warm comforter, a side table with a lamp, a comfy rug with a large black bear print, a banquette table with two chairs, and a space heater to help keep us toasty warm. Large, clear PVC windows with curtains. Let me keep a close eye on the Big Dipper. And it was all tucked in the woods. In the morning, deer would feed in the rhododendrons just a few feet from our tent that was not a tent, and a bathhouse with hot showers would just a hop, skip, and a quick dash away. If you're not familiar with the term glamping, it's a portmanteau of glamorous camping. As you might imagine, it's a crazy quilt mix of old-fashioned rub two sticks together, roughing it and not roughing it at all. Whether sleeping in yurts or tiny cabins or high-tech sphere structures that dangle between trees, glamping is the hip, next-level evolution of taking life outside. Julie and I were camping, not camping, at a place called Blue Bear Mountain, north of Boone and Meat Camp, where there are few lights to pollute the night sky. I'll admit it, I showed up with a smart-alecky smirk on my face. Glamping? For this guy? Get real. I left with a mental note to make a new reservation pronto. Julie and I have camped, really camped, as in a tent with portable stoves and goose-down sleeping bags and tent poles strung with dirty socks, the way God intended, for as long as there's been a Julie and me. Her first night in a tent was in a Merchant's Mill Pond State Park in Gates County, where barred owls bellowed through the swamp woods. Her first backpacking trip was through North Cascades National Park in Washington, where she climbed across icy ridges above the tree line. We've changed many a diaper in a tent and on the trail. We took pride in raising kids accustomed to a bit of discomfort, some dirt in their pancakes, and a five-day bathless funk. And since Marky and Jack have left the nest, we still stretch out under the stars a few times each year. So it's understandable that we had followed the glamping trend at a holier-than-thou distance. As more and more glamping destinations cropped up in North Carolina, however, I found my resolve wavering. Every time we drive from Raleigh to Morehead City, we pass the big billboard for Glamtopia in Kinston. Near Asheville, the Glamping Collective offers jaw-droppingly luxurious domes. Perhaps, we thought, purely as a scientific experiment, we should check this glamping thing out, just so we could check it off our list, and then go back to swatting spiders off the tent ceiling. Blue Bear Mountain Camp is a chunk of private land that includes a large open field for RVs, surrounded by additional RV sites, tent sites, glamping domes, and tiny cabins in the nearby woods. Kevin Quick brought one of the parcels of the property when he learned that there was a mobile home park slated for the site, and he couldn't bear the thought of it. It's taken him years to assemble about 10 parcels totaling 150 acres, which he treats as a national baby park. He says he hand-digs foundations for tent platforms to preserve the natural topography. He limits the number of guests. I'm doing everything I can to protect the place. Julie and I glamped at Blue Bear for two nights, hiking the property and lollygagging through downtown Boone. We did the usual camping stuff, cooked burgers over a campfire and so forth. And on the second night, when I woke up to rain pitter-pattering on the dome's taut walls, I didn't have to leap up and rush out of the tent to tighten the guy lines. I didn't dread packing up a wet tent and damp sleeping bags, knowing I'd have to dry them out at home. Instead, I turned over in my glamping bed and fell back into my deep glamping sleep. Maybe I was camping, maybe I wasn't. At the moment, I was too happy to think about the difference. For more information on Blue Bear Mountain Camp, check out bluebearmountain.com. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. For any comments or questions, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.